What a story that was that Dick Biondi told.
Yes, and that's not the only one. We'll talk about another story that he told a little later on involving, of all things, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Oh, wow.
Amazing story.
I know.
And what an amazing career.
I saw on WGNRadio.com interviews that Bob Surratt had done with Dick Biondi.
We've been running those also, yeah.
Long-time friends, and that Steve and Johnny. I've met Dick Biondi many times. I didn't really, you know, really know him that well. I know him more as a fan.
Yeah. I only saw him. I never got to meet him, though.
Yeah. He, I know this, when I was a little kid, that I would be under the covers with my transistor radio and listening to him, laughing my head off.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Crazy, he's crazy. He's nuts.
The Wild Italian.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got some clips we're going to play. I want to talk about the legend, truly legendary, the great Dick Biondi. Interestingly, he told that story of how the woman would always call at 1 o'clock in the morning. I have someone who always calls right at the start of every show we do on Sunday morning.
Yeah, and what do they say?
And they ask me, do I have Prince Albert in a can? I don't know. I don't know what that means, but let's get things started after this.
Ah, let's go! The Dick Biondi Show with Esso Besso!
Esso Besso!
Who needs a theme song anyway? I figure, you know, we're here every night at 9 o'clock. Every night, I have to remind you that Nut is here again. Hello there. This is the world's ugliest disc jockey, Dick Biondi, and we're here until midnight. We've got a lot of fun, and hello to all the wonderful people out there at 3 and 20 past the R&I for Capital MAY, Capital SONS, Masons, where teens are queens, and Masons is the place to shop for your Christmas shopping. There.
How about that?
Wow.
The world's ugliest DJ, he says. The great Dick Biondi passed away, as Schwani had in his newscast this past Monday, according to family members. 90 years old. He had been in failing health for quite a while, but man, oh man, oh man, what a radio career.
60 years doing this, and he never got tired of it?
67 years.
Wow.
And it was sort of a quintessential radio career, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Jobs, you know, being at the top of the world and then getting fired and moving to another city and being fired and quitting and back and forth and in Chicago, out of Chicago, Los Angeles, New York. He was just a legendary. Absolutely legendary. And, you know, had his biggest success here in Chicago, first at WLS, back when I was a ute. Schwani and I were both utes. I know I was listening to him on my little transistor radio.
I don't remember him on LS. I remember him when he came to WCFL. No, that was the first time I heard him.
Mid to late 60s.
That's right, yeah.
Is when he came back. I remember him when he was first at WLS at night.
You do remember that 9 to midnight time slot. Then.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would listen, and he'd be just, you know, just that kind of patter.
Right.
He never abandoned. He never slowed down.
No, he didn't.
He always sounded the same throughout his entire career on a variety of radio stations in Chicago. But, you know, in the early days of rock and roll radio, Dick Biondi was right there leading the charge. He is said to have been the first DJ to ever play a Beatles record on the air. Please me.
1963.
Yeah.
Before Ed Sullivan.
That was before the Beatles took off.
Yeah.
And that was back in the days when DJs could pick their own songs. Dick Biondi was at the forefront. You know, he hosted sock hops, you know, these dances for the high school kids all over the place. And was a very, very nice man. The several times that I spoke with him, as I say, I didn't really have a personal relationship with him. It just never, you know, just never panned out. But the several times that I spoke with him, he was a very, very, very nice man and legendary. So I wanted to open the show today with just your memories, our you know, listener memories of Dick Biondi and what you remember of him, as I do, listening as a little kid with my transistor radio and my little earbud, you know, so nobody would know why I was under the covers by myself, you know, listening to him. But 312-981-7200, let's just start off today with a little remembrance of the great Dick Biondi. Andy, do you even have any recollection? Because he, you know, was on the radio on WBBM-FM, amazingly, for a while, for quite a long time on WJMK.
Yeah, that's where I remember him from.
You know, and then I think he went back to WLS-FM in the evening. I don't remember the exact sequence of it all, but his career spanned multi-generations.
Yeah, obviously I had heard of him because he was as legendary as you point out, but I my first memory of him is at WJMK. My parents would listen to that station a little bit on the way to work and school and things of that nature, so I would hear him there. But you couldn't, if you lived in Chicago, you couldn't help but avoid the name. Let's put it to you that way. Everybody knew who he was.
Yeah, no matter what, because he was on so many radio stations for such a long time, people of multi-generations remember him. Robert Feeder has a terrific obituary of him today in the Sun-Times. I read a lot of the obituaries that are out there. Some are factual, some are not so factual. Robert Feeder's is right on the mark. If you get a newspaper, or if you go to ChicagoSunTimes.com or RobertFeeder.com, you can see the obit. Shawnee, do you remember his pizza song?
On top of a pizza,
he did a spoof of on top of what?
Are you laughing at me, Andy?
Yes,
rightfully so. What's the actual name of that song? On top of Old Smokey.
On top of Old Smokey.
On top of Old Smokey. He did a spoof of it, playing on his Italian background, called "On Top of a Pizza." Take a listen to this. How about that? On top of a pizza. Dick Biondi. And you want to know why I am the way I am today? It's because I grew up listening to stuff like this.
That's
on the
only
radio.
One reason why you are the way
That's
you
very
are
true.
Today.
It is a multi-level thing. All right, let me take a break here. We'll come right back.
Dean,
and then,
before you take a break, can I quickly jump in with a weather update?
Oh, yes,
here?
Please.
We have now a flash flood warning issued from the National Weather Service for Cook, DuPage, and Will counties until 1:16. That's a flash flood warning until 1:16 this afternoon from the National Weather Service for Cook, DuPage, and Will counties.
What is going to happen with the race today, the NASCAR race?
We're still, they're going to pick up where they left off yesterday.
They're going to try.
Try at least.
At 10 o'clock, but it's raining like crazy outside.
Well, not only that, it's foggy. It is very foggy downtown. But so far, everything is up and running as scheduled. And this afternoon's race, which was to have started at 4:30, is going to be at 4:05 now.
Hmm.
Yeah, that'll be at the mercy of whenever they're able to get the Loop 121 restarted. I mean, they were talking about especially rain tires. And,
that's what was canceled yesterday because of less severe weather than what we have right now. That's why I'm wondering if, you know, they're going to be able to finish that, get everything done today. And if they don't, do they push it till tomorrow? Do they push it till...
That's the word, yes.
Yeah, tomorrow is the rain day, so to speak. So...
Hmm. It's a good idea having this race in Chicago. Really good idea. All right, we're back in a minute. Stickers.
Yeah, the Big Ten countdown. I love.
I'm young again.
I love that, man. Hey, the Big Ten countdown.
The sun goes up,
and the
car goes by.
The Super CFL jingle also.
Oh, yes. That jingle package on that station was tremendous.
For radio people, that's like porn. Let's be honest, right? Am I right?
That's true.
Are you right? How many times have you sat around with your radio buddies listening to jingles? And it's, you know, the jingles. Play the, Bob, can you play that again? Just so we can hear the jingle again one more time. The, that's the...
It's 10 WCFL.
Maybe.
Nick Biondi from WCFL. Vanity Fair, number 2 on the Big Ten Countdown, Hitchin' a Ride.
Yeah. That's how you know when you're a big radio dork like Schwani and I, and maybe Andy. I think Andy's got a little radio dork potential also.
Oh, yeah.
But the jingles, the singing call letters, was such a big part of that era, right?
Oh, it certainly was. Every station had a certain package and a little melodic line to identify the call letters.
Right, and Dick Biondi, you know, was part of that era of radio, you know, that defines it all. I found a clip from, there's a Dick Biondi documentary that they have been working on for years now. I don't know what the delay is, but some local producers have been trying to put something together, you know, a motion picture documentary about the life and career of Dick Biondi. And one of the people featured in it is Frankie Valli of the Four Seasons fame. And here's what he had to say about the great Dick Biondi.
Well, he is the real deal. I mean, go all the way back and he is certainly one of the great representations of what radio was all about. He had great ears. I mean, you know, that's a very important part of it, you know. That's the difference in the day where the disc jockey was really able to pick the music that he wanted to play, especially the new music that had not even been tested. He was responsible for a lot of big hits. A lot of big hits that he started playing before anybody played caught on throughout the country and sometimes internationally. So those kind of guys were really very, very important to the artist's career.
Yeah, there's Frankie Valli, Four Seasons fame. They don't get, you know, too much bigger than that, talking about the influence of Dick Biondi. When he talks about, you know, being the first to expose audiences to some of the major stars, like how about Elvis Presley, for example? How about Buddy Holly and Jerry Lee Lewis? And as we had mentioned a few moments ago, Biondi was the first to play the Beatles. That's what they are saying. The first to play the Beatles on American radio, he played the song "Please Please Me." Oh yeah, like I please you, and introduced that to us all. As I said, if you want to read the complete Dick Biondi story, take a look at the Sun Times today. Robert Feeder, who is now retired, the media observer. A journalist for Chicago for the past, 30, 40 years, something, now retired, did a special obituary on Dick Biondi, and it's fantastic. And if you want to know more about Dick Biondi, I would suggest that you take a look at that. We'll get to all of our regular features here today. Schwani, I don't want to rush you through the far-flung forecast if we do it now, but we can do it after the news.
Oh, right? Absolutely, sure.
Will you be too tired after the news? I know during the newscast, Schwani, it's like when a boxer comes out, you know, after fighting a round. Schwani does the news. He goes back to his corner. He has people, you know, hosing him down. They put the bucket, you know, they take the mouthpiece out.
And my leg is jumping up and down, my trainer says, "What's the matter, kid? Are you nervous?"
In that leg.
They take his false teeth out. And he, come on, kid. Burgess Meredith somehow appears. And, come on, kid.
Come on,
you can get in there.
You gotta get in there again.
Come on, you gotta do the far-flung forecast.
You need a manager.
Get in there and punch that side of beef.
The body, the body, the body.
Oh, my goodness. It's only 9:28.
That's our behind the scenes. Thank goodness Dick Biondi never had to put up with anything like we have to put up with here every Sunday morning.
Oh, you're blaming me now.
Yes, I am. Why should I change now?
I was going to say now.
Yeah, why should I change now? Coming up later in the show, we'll update everybody on this NASCAR race and what's going on with all of that.
And we just got an update as
well.
Oh, well,
let's get it now then.
Okay.
Let's go to our breaking news desk. Here's Dave Schwann.
According to OEMC, the Office of Emergency Management at NASCAR, due to the threat of severe weather, NASCAR has postponed the gates opening. Now, they postponed the gates opening.
Hmm.
They will provide event updates as they are available.
So what, the gates were supposed to open at?
Their gates were supposed to open here
at 9.
At 9,
at 9.
And they've been postponed now. That's the gates opening. So
they haven't said anything about even what's pouring
no,
outside.
No, to restart a race time or anything yet. No, they haven't said anything like that yet.
Now, were you guys at the radio station yesterday? I avoided downtown.
I was.
What was it like down there with all the...
I was stunned. It was normal. It was a normal day.
Hmm.
I ran into no trouble traffic-wise. I was out walking around. There was no issue.
Was it noisy because of the cars?
No.
Going not know,
really.
Round and round?
No. And well, the actual race didn't, the what started to be the race was at 4 o'clock. And, but, you know, as you know, Dean, I live close by, and I didn't hear anything. So it was very interesting. For me, that's a story in itself.
I noticed there were quite a few less cars on the road yesterday.
Yes,
People. I think part of it is people are out of town for the 4th of July weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That's because it's always a little light. But people just wanted to completely avoid getting in any kind of traffic mess with all the construction that's going on and this race. People were just completely avoiding it. It was delightful to drive around yesterday.
Delightful.
Really.
I can just see you just tooling around.
I didn't even have any place to
delightful.
Go.
Delightful.
I didn't have anywhere to go.
Oh,
I just got in the
delightful.
Car.
Delightful.
It was like the old days when you were kids. Hey, let's go for a ride. Just go sit in the car and drive around. It was a very nice day, it turns out. Yesterday, and I watched a little bit of it on the television.
Yeah,
it was really cool to see our city highlighted that way. I thought,
yeah, you know, they did a nice job, kind of taking you inside the racer too, and the differences between the street course and what they're normally used to driving, the ovals, because of the shifters and the gears and how fast they could get going on the very few straightaways. And it was kind of cool to watch the as they were racing for position in the big race today. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool to watch the whole thing from my safe distance of my
yes,
house.
Yes, that's the key.
I didn't have to be out in the middle of it. All right, well, we'll keep you posted on what's going on with all of that. Schwani's got the far-flung forecast, and it's all coming up after this by Dave Better Late Than Never Schwann.
I'm catching my breath.
You okay?
I've got to put my choppers back.
Hydration? In. Need some Gatorade?
Yeah. A little water after that newscast. I'll be okay. I'll be okay.
Look at you with the acting.
I'll be all right.
Look at you. Look at you with the radio dramatization. Hey, Fibber McGee and Molly, settle down.
I'm just picking up where you left off about how they had to
put
me in the corner and rub me down and everything.
Oh, try. Everyone cast. Knows. Schwani is the Rocky Balboa of radio news. Everybody knows that.
He's lefty, right?
Yes, I am a lefty.
See, there
I
you
am.
Go.
Well, good morning, everyone, and I want to wish everyone a very happy and safe 4th of July holiday weekend.
Thank you. Same to you.
That is the subject of our far-flung forecast.
Yeah, what
today,
do you know?
Actually.
How about that?
We go to Braintree, Massachusetts.
Excuse
today.
Me?
You're
now, okay, now I joke often that you're making these names.
I'm not making this up.
You are making up Braintree, Arizona.
I'm not.
What did you say?
No, a little further away than Arizona.
Say what?
Massachusetts. Braintree, Massachusetts. Braintree is named after the same name in the Essex in the town of Braintree. There's a portion of Essex, England, that is named Braintree. It goes back to the 1630s.
I'm going to hire a fact checker for these.
Go right ahead.
I'm going to call CNN and get
go
one of their fact
go
checkers.
Go right ahead.
Because I think, Schwanee, I think we're going to have a big radio expose that after all these years we learn Schwanee has made up every single far-flung forecast that we've heard so far.
All right, but they will find that this is correct. Braintree incorporated in 1640, and it happens to be the birthplace of John Adams, one of the founding fathers, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and our second president, because it was on this date, and it was great, that the Continental Congress passed a resolution saying that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be free and independent states, and they voted to approve it on July 4th. I love the quote from John Adams, because he actually thought today, July 2nd, would be the national holiday rather than the 4th. But he wrote that, "I am apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival. It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shoes, games."
With shoes?
Shoes. I'll get to that in a second.
What do you mean with shoes?
I'm going to explain that.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, he's making all of this up.
As he goes along, which is a talent.
Shoes.
Thank you, Andy. Yes, with shoes, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other from this time forward forevermore. Now, what are shoes? S-H-E-W-S. I looked this up. It is an archaic spelling and pronunciation of show or shows. Now, think about that.
So we do a shoe every week?
We do a shoe every week.
We've got a really big shoe?
Those of us of a certain age remember Ed Sullivan saying we have a really big shoe.
Size 12.
Size 12.
Braintree, Arizona.
Braintree, Massachusetts, has cloudy skies in 69 today. Wow. The birthplace of John Adams.
Clearly, Schwanee taking the weekend off for the holiday.
Now I have to go back to the corner.
Right. Yeah, you better go see Bridget Meredith. Get to our weekly health segment, which is all factual, by the way, coming up next. Where it is 9:42, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, 4th of July weekend, and we continue with our regular Sunday program today, all things health. Usually from 9 to 9:30 with Dr. Kevin Most. He's taking the holiday weekend off, but leaves the segment in very good hands with Dr. Lauren Taglia, dermatologist and also medical director with Northwestern RMG. Dr. Taglia, I thought, you know, we would have a nice sunny weekend and, you know, things to talk about of protecting our skin against all the sun that we're having. But Dr. Taglia, first of all, welcome. But this kind of weather that we're having today really is the dermatologist's friend, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. Not exactly what we were hoping for, though, I know.
Yeah,
thanks for having me, Dean.
Yeah, it's nice to have you on with us. I still want to talk about, you know, protecting your skin in the summertime, and that's the main focus of this, because we are going to get back to super sunny days, and you see people, you know, outside just lotioning themselves up, hopefully with, you know, sunblock before they go out into the sun, but just laying out there and frying themselves. And, you know, as we've learned, while it may seem more attractive, it really is really quite dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, we're seeing, you know, rates of skin cancer certainly on the rise, and we're seeing it in younger patients. You know, I think people do understand a little better today than they did maybe even 20 or so years ago that the sun is, you know, is very potent, and we have to take just levels of protection, you know, when we're outdoors. you know, as a dermatologist, I certainly encourage a healthy lifestyle, and that includes being outside, but we definitely have to go outside kind of armed and prepared. So lots of different ways to protect, though. So, you know, patients, I think, are more informed about the importance of wearing, you know, sunblocks. And I think we've certainly gotten more options out over the market, and I hope that continues, that we have more options for using, you know, different kinds of sunblock. But there are all different kinds of ways to protect our skin from the sun, you know. Things like sun protective clothing can be really helpful. I don't know if you've ever seen cyclists or professional fishing, you know, men and women, where they're kind of protected head to toe with hats and shoes and long sleeves. And, you know, that can certainly be helpful. Even just avoiding those peak sun hours, you know, trying to get out before the 10 o'clock hour, and, you know, maybe reserving, you know, our gardening and long walks and things to after 2 o'clock can protect our skin as well.
Yeah. When you talk about, you know, getting some outdoor exposure, but just not too much. How do you, can you be more specific about that? Because, you know, on one hand, we're told, get outside, get some sunshine, the vitamin D, it's good for you. At what point, you know, do you need to block that off and begin to protect yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's a question I probably get every day from patients, you know, how much is enough, right? Now, in terms of vitamin D, we know that the sun is not our best way to obtain vitamin D, just because of the associated risk of skin cancer with sun exposure. So I'll always, you know, encourage patients to get vitamin D. Probably the healthiest sources are in our diet, you know, either, you know, foods that are rich, you know, green leafy vegetables are rich in vitamin D, or fortified drinks are often, you know, enriched with vitamin D. The sun is one opportunity to getting vitamin D, but it's probably not our healthiest way to get vitamin D.
Yeah, a lot of people take, you know, multivitamins, and there's vitamin D in there, or just vitamin D supplements. A lot of people just take a vitamin D supplement, you know, to make sure that they're getting enough. How much time would you say is okay if you're outside unprotected? Is there a certain amount of time that you can say that, no, that's it, get yourself into some shade?
Well, great question. I'd say, you know, anything more than about 10 minutes, we really want to make sure that we have, sunblock on. And that's another thing I think that surprises folks. Like, we really recommend sunblock, you know, 365 days of the year. Dr. Most will tell you that, you know, we talked about that at his appointment. You know, we really need sunblock every single day, you know, to any skin that's exposed. You know, from the studies, we know, dermatologists included, that we don't apply enough sunblock and we don't reapply enough. So there's always sort of little gaps in where we're probably getting light on our skin, even when we think we have everything protected. So creating those habits where we're getting sunblock on each and every day is important. But anything more than about 10 minutes, you really want to have sunblock on the skin.
I want to follow up a little bit on what you were talking about of sun protective clothing. I mean, is there a certain type of clothing which is more protective, say, if I went outside just with a regular long sleeve shirt on? Is that enough protection? A cotton shirt?
Not enough. You know, most, you know, if you think of like a cotton, you know, white blended t-shirt, it's probably going to be an SPF of less than 10, you know, because it's inherent in the material, but also in the weave. So there are these companies that have been around for quite some time. One that comes to mind is a brand called Coolabar. They've been around for quite a while, and they test all of their clothing, and most of that will protect 99% of the sun rays.
Oh, wow.
And what's nice is it's washable. The fabrics have also come quite a long way, so they're very breathable. a lot of my patients that will incorporate it. You know, say, you know, you think about the people that are running outside or cycling outside, you know, they're creating quite a bit of heat. But when you put those, you know, sun protective clothing materials on, it actually keeps the skin a bit cooler, and it'll also wick or absorb away any of the sweat. So it could be, you know, quite a nice way to protect the skin, especially when you're outdoors for long periods of time, because even the sunblocks that are water resistant, that are supposed to last a little bit longer with sweat-induced activities or getting in and out of the pool, most of those need to be reapplied every, you know, 2 hours, which most of us are failing to do, truthfully, me included. So, yeah, you know, the clothing is a really nice way to kind of have a second layer of protection on our skin when we're going to be outdoors all day.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's why I found this interesting, because I've heard about the sun protective clothing specifically for that reason. And I've gone out with, you know, just a shirt on, a long sleeve shirt, and thought, well, I am protected. I have clothing. You know, I have this layer of cotton in between the two. Now I find out that that is, may or may not be proper protection. What was the brand of clothing that you were talking about? I know we're going to get 150 calls on that when we're done here.
Yeah, so there's one, it's called Coolabar, and that's been around quite a long time. And again, the styles have become a bit more sophisticated and mainstream, so it doesn't look like, you know, special clothing that just dermatologists recommend. It, you know, it looks like what you'd normally wear. Now, some of the bigger brands, Dean, have, like, picked up on this. So a brand I can think of is Patagonia. They have some of their line, that have the, it'll say UPF. So that's the equivalent of SPF when it comes to the clothing. And there's sun, you know, line started by two women in Chicago called Mott 50. They have a really nice line, specifically, I think, geared toward moms and kids. And so that can be fun, too. And they're local, so that's another one to check out.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Let's keep an eye out for all of that. The 708 area code is asking, is there a difference between sunblock and sunscreen?
No, you know, those are kind of used interchangeably. You know, what we really want our patients and we really want everyone kind of looking for are, when you go to the store, you want a broad spectrum sunblock, which means it's going to protect against the UVA rays, which are sort of associated with aging and brown spots, and then UVB, the B for burn rays. So when you look at a sun, you know, the label of a sunscreen, it should say broad spectrum. And the number you're really looking for is 30. So 30 or more. We get a lot of questions on that, too. You know, is there really a difference, say, between if I choose an SPF of 30 or an SPF of 50 or even 100? Like, what are those differences? And our academy, the AAD, recommends 30 or more, because at an SPF of 30, you're blocking 97% of those, those sun rays. Now, there is probably an advantage for patients that choose the higher SPF, the 50 or the 70, in the sense that you really have to get it on the way that they design it. You need to get enough on to get that full level of the SPF. So we've found in studies that patients across the board, all ages, all backgrounds, tend to, you know, be a little short on how much sunblock they actually put on. You want about an ounce for, you know, a head-to-toe application. And so many of us, you know, are in a hurry and we put it on and we run out the door that we're probably not getting enough on. And when you don't get enough on, you're likely not getting that full equivalent SPF of 30. So those higher levels we think might protect for if you're not getting enough on. Say you're putting on a 50, but you're only putting on half the amount, you might, you know, get some additional coverage by just having that higher SPF.
Yeah.
But no sunscreen or no sunblock protects 100%. So that's the other thing to kind of know for patients, you know. And that's where I think doing the other things as well when we're outside. Maybe having that, you know, wide-brimmed hat on, or kind of wearing the layers, the sun protective layers, perhaps seeking out some shade and avoiding those peak sun hours. I think all of that collectively goes a long way.
Yeah. What about lotions versus sprays? I've seen, you know, plenty of people with the spray sunblock or sunscreen, and when I see people applying it, it just looks like they're putting on the smallest amount possible, and I wonder if they're even getting any protection from that.
Well, you got it. You're on. That's exactly what we found as well. I think the sprays are really convenient. You know, I have three young kids, and I can tell you, I think the sprays, you know, the kids don't tend to wiggle away as much as when I put on the creams and really rub it in.
Right.
You know, I think the sprays are probably convenient and great for reapplication, but they're not my favorite for a first pass, just because, just like you touched on, like, we don't get enough of it on. So what I try to encourage patients to do is, before even maybe leaving to go to the park or go to the beach or go to the pool, using a cream, because that's preferential, and rubbing that cream in, so you know you got fairly good coverage. And then bringing the spray and making sure you're really going in a couple directions, you know, maybe back and forth at least 2 to 4 times with the spray.
Wow. Wow.
And then again, really rubbing it in. You really got to kind of rub it in to know that you're getting enough of it spread.
How often should you reapply? How often should you reapply?
Yeah, I'd say every 2 hours.
Wow. Boy, yeah. we're just doing everything wrong.
Well, you know, it's good to keep those things in mind. We're not shooting for perfection. You know, that's what I say. We're not shooting for perfection. You're just sort of, you know, you're trying to keep it in mind, you know, keep it convenient so it's easy to do, you know. Keep it in multiple places, in your, maybe in your gym bag or in your work bag, in your school bag, in your pool bag. Kind of have it in multiple places, just knowing that, you know, probably by the time you think of it, you needed to already be reapplying, and particularly when you're going to be outside. But, you know, again, as dermatologists, we know a healthy lifestyle includes being outside, and I know I personally try to spend time outdoors to keep my kids and myself active, but it's just a matter of really kind of having all these things in place to help protect us.
Sure, sure. And, you know, many of you may be saying, wow, that sounds like a lot of work, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's better than going to visit a dermatologist and having the dermatologist say, I think we found some skin cancer here. You don't want that. Mm-hmm. Because as Dr. Taglia said, those numbers are going up all the time. There's a very simple way to protect yourself. It's with these skin protective clothing and some of these sunblocks and so forth that can avoid getting that kind of diagnosis from a doctor. I really appreciate you joining us today, Doctor. Really interesting. Dr. Lauren Taglia, Medical Director with Northwestern RMG, and also a dermatologist. Dermatologist to Dr. Kevin Most. So, you know, she must be great. That must... I appreciate you joining
us. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I knew I had big shoes to fill, but thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You did a terrific job. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll update news next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Oh, you're done.
Yes. I know.
Don't you usually have some, like, official stuff to say?
I just did.
I know, but it didn't sound like you were done.
We have a new close now.
Oh.
I'm Dave Schwann, WGN News.
Yes.
Next news when it happens. Next scheduled news at 10:30.
Ah.
And I said that.
But that's not what you usually say.
This is the new. It's called change.
Look, the one part of the newscast that I'm paying attention
is the end.
The very end.
Excuse me. Now I have to go back. I have to go back to my corner. Burgess Meredith is calling me.
You have to alert me. You have to alert me when you have, you know, if anything's out of, you know, out of kilter at all.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know these
okay.
things.
Producer I'm
like
Jack.
I'm like the conductor of this orchestra. I need to know if the violins aren't going to come in.
No.
The violins
end before I
think. If
you're the conductor, you are conducting the violins. It's not the other way around.
Oh, I've got a baton for you, my friend. I got news for you.
Oh.
You know what? I was reading, we were talking about the great Dick Biondi passing away this past Monday. He had been not in the best of health for quite some long time, but passed away this past Monday, 90 years old. We'll have much more in our newscast, and we've got a lot on the web also. Do you know that at one point he had 60% of the radio listening audience listening
to his show? Isn't that amazing?
At one time.
Isn't that, yeah.
60% of everybody listening to the radio during his years at WLS. Are they even still on the air, by the way? Is that station even still on anymore?
Yes, they are. It's very different now than it was then.
Don't they do a barn dance show or something?
The Prairie Farmer.
When he was on from 1960 to 1963. Yeehaw! Come on.
All right.
Come on down.
All right, all right. That's
come on down to the world's largest store. when he was on from 1960 to 63, of everyone listening to the radio, he commanded 60% of that audience, which is phenomenal. Those are like Wally Phillips numbers.
Those are Wally Phillips numbers.
Those are like Wally Phillips, numbers from back in the day. These days they have, there's so many things to distract you now. You know, radio. Mm-hmm. Back then, all you listened to was AM radio. But now there's a million different things to listen to. And this is the other thing that I found interesting, that he claims to have been fired from 25 radio stations over his career. That's a radio thing.
Oh, yeah, sure. It definitely is.
How many times have you been fired?
Three.
Not counting today.
Not, three.
Three.
Not counting today.
He didn't even hear me say that.
I did, yes. And how many times have you been told your services are no longer
needed? I think three.
Three?
Also.
Okay.
I think three. Andy?
Yeah, that might be my magic number, too.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So Dick Biondi was fired eight times more than
we were.
Any of us.
Yeah.
We'll have more memories of the great Dick Biondi coming up in a little while. You know what else surprising news this week? Looking Glass Theater is shut down. We'll talk about that when we come back right after this. Well, this is not how we like our 4th of July weekend. It's all rainy and gloomy and messy. We like them sunny and hot, and being outside is all definitely curtailing it. See if we can get an update on all this in a couple of minutes, just so you know what's going on for the, the weather for the weekend. We'll get an update on that. But, with regard to the NASCAR race, after all this talk and all this, excitement leading up to it, to have it, come to a storm, shutting everything down. But not officially shut down, though, right, Schwani?
That's correct. Well, yeah, that's the truth. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in there for Schwani.
Is Schwani not here?
No, I'm here, but I'm following something that's coming across right now.
Flash flood warning.
Another one here for Cook County. Cook County specifically has been extended now until 3:15 this afternoon. Mm-hmm. We already have two in place for Will and DuPage, but specifically for Cook County, it now runs until 3:15 this afternoon. Some heavy rain reported throughout the area, and as we mentioned at the top of the newscast at 10 o'clock, flooding, a big problem now all of a sudden on the expressways.
Yeah, well, I noticed this morning, and I didn't really have that far to go today because I'm broadcasting from WGN television on Bradley Place because I thought it would be complete pandemonium.
We
downtown.
All did.
Mm-hmm. The race turns out not so much with the rain has kind of, put everything to the side for now. But these are flash flood warnings that you're talking about. And
correct.
What I was going to say was that I did notice on the streets, the streets have filled up with water, something that we haven't seen out there for quite a while because it's been so dry.
It's been
We've had this dry drought.
Yeah, yeah. We have flooding reported on the Stevenson inbound at California at stop-and-go traffic. And on the Stevenson outbound between Pulaski and Cicero, that is now closed because of flooding.
Okay, so we'll keep you posted with all the latest weather information. What is the latest now with all things NASCAR for today?
The latest word was that the gates have reopened or were to have reopened just a couple minutes ago at 10:15. Now, as to when the actual race that was postponed from yesterday will start up again, don't know a start time on that yet. But the gates were to have opened at 9 this morning, then they were delayed, and late word now is that 10:15 people can start coming in.
Okay, so apparently they are anticipating some action.
Some action there, yes. And again, the issue yesterday was lightning, because there was, you know, lightning in and around the area, and when that happens, the city can make the call to say outdoor activities can no longer proceed. But as one of the NASCAR people said to WGN's Judy Wang this morning, if it's rain, they put on the rain tires and they should be good to go. But that, you know, with weather moving in, that can change also.
I'm just looking at my WGN weather app. Do you have the WGN weather app?
It's right here.
I like to look at it and pretend that I'm Tom Skilling. Well, you see, I'm looking at the radar right now. And this big mass, it's over us.
It is. Yeah,
sometimes you can look at this. That's why I love about the app, is that you can see the live radar, number one, but you can put it into an animation, so it goes ahead. Like, I can look at the radar, what they're anticipating to happen between now and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And, you know, you see the storm that's moving to the east. And eventually, it's going to clear the Chicago area. But it looks like, Shawnee, as I'm looking at this radar, it looks like this is going to be over us for a while.
It will be. Yes, you're right, Tom. It sure will be over us for a while. And
4:18 is when the radar, when you animate this, you know, to look ahead in the future. 4:18. Is when it looks like the rain finally clears the Chicago area.
Yeah, and again, this flash flood warning for Cook County running until 3:15 this afternoon, and DuPage and Will County until 1:15. But again, we're in a state of real flux here, so things could change.
Let me show you some weather pictures now that we
on the radio
from our viewers
on the radio.
All right, well, we'll keep it right.
Boy, you are having so much fun this morning.
It's amazing when I'm not near you, when I'm in a completely different building, how liberating it is.
Okay, round six is over. Burgess Meredith is calling me back now to the corner. So,
and if you want to know what Shawnee's talking about, good luck. I've been trying to figure it out for the last 30 years.
40 years.
40 years, whatever it is. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. It's 10:24. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. July the 2nd. We'll get to all of our regular features throughout this slightly abbreviated show today. We're off at 12 noon. But I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about what unfortunately is turning out to be the big theater story of the week. And that is the Looking Glass Theater, which has been in place in downtown Chicago since 1988, when it first started, is planning on pausing its programming, reducing its full-time staff from 24 down to 10. It's a big blow for theater news in Chicago, and particularly fans of Looking Glass Theater Company, of which I have been a longtime fan, and the recipient of the 2011 Tony Award for Excellence in Regional Theater. I don't think I've ever seen a bad play at Looking Glass. It's always been amazing. But, you know, they're citing lots of different reasons for this. One of them, people not wanting to come downtown. For any reason, much less to, you know, see a play, park their car, maybe get some dinner. It's expensive to come downtown. Maybe all of that is a factor. Joining me to chat about this a little bit is Marissa Lynn Jones, who is the executive director, CEO of the League of Chicago Theaters. Newlywed Marissa Lynn Jones, I might add. Congratulations to you, Marissa.
Thank you so much, Dean. It's great to be on the show this morning. And, yeah, I got a little name change there. So
yeah. Yeah, congratulations. That's very nice. So, I mean, you know, League of Chicago Theaters represents a whole variety of theaters, downtown, in the neighborhoods, in the suburbs, all over the place. I know that you don't have any more information than the Looking Glass Theater itself revealed on late Friday when they revealed this information that they were pausing programming at the theater. But what do you make of this in terms of theater going, especially in downtown Chicago? One of the reasons that they are citing is that people are not coming downtown.
Yes, I think so. There's and just to give scope, the league previous to the pandemic had about 250 member theaters, and right now we're about 185 post pandemic. So, this is not just a Looking Glass issue, but we're looking at the theater and the arts community in total, and the toll that the pandemic has reverberated across our organizations. We also see, the change the pandemic has brought with people wanting to stream online or, not really wanting to, as you said, come downtown or it's harder to get people to leave home. And then when we do get people to come out, they're usually looking for the lowest price ticket. It's usually a last minute decision. And so a lot of the traditional ways in which theaters operate, where we get to plan ahead and budget due to subscriptions and membership sales, we're not able to do that because there's so much inconsistency there now. But it's a huge guessing game. And just to give some insight into that, that takes, let's say, a good week post-pandemic, we would sell about maybe 1,200 tickets. Now, especially in the summertime, where you have competing things because Chicago is such a wonderful city with so much to offer, we're only seeing about, 600 tickets now when an okay week post-pandemic would have been 1,000. So, if that's a reflection of what's happening across theaters, about 40% of sales, which individual ticket sales and memberships really are a huge part of, helping us make goals in terms of budgets, in terms of being able to pay artists and crew members and union workers, we're really seeing a downfall in.
Yeah, in attendance, I hear what you're saying, and that's very interesting. I was going to ask you about Hot Ticks sales because Hot Ticks is where you can buy half price tickets. Half price is where the discounts were. If you wanted to, at the last minute, make a decision, hey, let's go see a play, let's go, see this show or that show, you'd go to Hot Ticks to get the discounted seating on this. Even that's hurting. So this action, which has happened to the Looking Glass Theater, and I might add, happened to Victory Gardens, happened to the House Theater, happened to lots of different theater companies. The Looking Glass is not the first one to have something like this happen.
It's not the first one, and it's not just Chicago. It's across the nation that we're seeing. Unfortunately, managing directors and the boards have to make these really tough decisions on how to make the theater sustainable in the long run. And unfortunately, that means in the short run that they have to make these tough decisions.
Yeah, I've had a long relationship with Looking Glass theater people, as we've talked about and promoted their shows through the years, promoted their performances through the years. I've put in calls to everybody since this news came out on Friday, and I have not heard back from anybody. I've not had any comment. I guess I'm not surprised that they're not commenting at this point. They did put out a statement about it, which we've shared. And that's where it sits right now. As we learn more, we will certainly let everyone know. But a very interesting perspective from you, Marissa, on how this is not Looking Glass unique, that theaters not only in Chicago but around the country are all suffering from the post-pandemic. People are just not going out, and I'm sure, given some of the news that we hear about downtown Chicago, people are especially hesitant to come downtown to see a show right now. Keep us posted on what you hear and what you know, would you please?
Absolutely, and I would just encourage, you know, this is where the support really needs to come in for all of our organizations, for our local neighborhoods, for all of the theaters, no matter how, you know, large or small they may be. It's really important that we go out and support and see shows, but also an individual donation it makes such a huge difference. There's a number of resources on the LEAD site, on Arts Alliance PCG, in terms of national support on the national level, the state level, and the city level on a number of things that we can do to help support not only the stages, but the artists, the teaching artists, the crew, the union workers. They're all affected by this. And so please, you know, look on our sites and see what you can do in terms of contacting your offices, your state offices, so that we can continue to get funding for these organizations. Because, you know, as we see in the European model, there's a lot of funding, you know, from the government for the arts, and that makes a huge difference. Those donations make a huge difference.
They sure do. You can learn more at the League of Chicago Theaters. That's where Marissa is. Their executive director and CEO, Marissa Lynn Jones, thank you for joining us this morning. We'll talk more about theater in Chicago and continue our memories of the legendary Dick Biondi, who passed away, coming up after a check of WGN Newt. All right, Juani, we've got Bill Snyder joining us. Bill has joined us on the show many times. He is Tom Skilling's weather producer, and nobody keeps an eye on the weather, you know, maybe with the slight exception of Tom Skilling, but Bill Snyder is a pretty close second to that, of keeping an eye on things going on. And man, Bill, what a weekend we're winding up with now, with all this rain, right?
Isn't that something, Dean? I mean, we've been begging for rain for weeks now, and you know, many areas, well, most of our area actually is in a severe drought with quite a rainfall deficit going since the beginning of the year, and actually since mostly when the beginning of spring. And it's really, really something how this has turned around in just a couple of days. It started yesterday where we had you know, a band of thunderstorms that impacted only a small portion of the area, but it did deposit some heavy rainfall along the Lake Breeze front. And then now today it's much more widespread, and some areas it's causing some major issues, and the timing couldn't be worse with this big NASCAR race this weekend. I really don't see how they're going to get this in today. I really don't.
Well,
I don't know.
That's what I was going to ask you. Not only, you know, will they be able to get it in, but everybody else who's not going to the race, not participating in all of that, how do you even plan your holiday weekend with all this? How long is the rain going to stick around today?
You know what, Dean? I think, first of all, there's parts of our area are under a flash flood warning right now, just because we've had such heavy amounts of rain fall in a short period of time. And, you know, even in a drought situation, when the ground is so hard like that, you just you're not able to percolate into the soils when you get that much rainfall so quickly. So, for example, Woodbridge in DuPage County has had 1.7 inches of rain in 30 minutes. I mean,
wow.
That's more than, you know, I'd say about three quarters of a month's worth of rain in about a half an hour. I mean, that's just, there's no ground that can absorb that type of moisture. It just runs off. And we're getting several reports of flooding across the area, even in, you know, Downers Grove, Bolingbrook, and of course portions of the city. I've heard some reports of flooding on I-55, not too far from Midway Airport. The Austin neighborhood, there's reports of some flooding going on, Garfield Park. So it's not a good day. And, you know, while the rains should begin to slowly subside and sag to the south and east with time here, I think we're going to be still dealing with some showers here, you know, well into the afternoon and, you know, before the rains move out completely by tonight.
I like to pretend so. I'm you or Tom Skilling by looking at the WGN weather app and pretending like I know what I'm looking at. But I love that the live radar is there. I love that I can animate it and push it into the future. So, I can, you know, you see the big blob of, you know, storm above the Chicago area on there. And as you animate it, it begins to move out. It looks like, if I'm reading this right, and please tell me if I'm an idiot and I'm wrong. It looks like around 4 or 5 o'clock is when before the storms finally are out of here.
Absolutely, that's correct. That's what I was saying. Late, you know, well into the afternoon. So I don't know what the folks at NASCAR are going to do, because even when the rains move out, it's still going to be awfully soggy down there, and you don't know what kind of condition the you know, the track is going to be in after this amount of rainfall. So my gosh, it's not inconceivable that they could push things back to tomorrow, because the weather will be much improved by tomorrow, and as we head into the 4th of July too.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my other question for you. If today winds up being a rainout, are people going to be able to salvage the weekend tomorrow? Or, you know, the third, the fourth?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely, Dean. Yeah, it's much improved weather coming the next couple of days, and for outdoor festivities on the 4th. It is going to turn pretty hot, though. You know, we had. You know, we were well into the 80s yesterday. It was very muggy, as you noticed. That this is part of the reason why we're seeing such you know, heavy amounts of rainfall. You know, much of the spring and early summer conditions were so dry, and we even marveled at the fact that how low the moisture content of the air was. I mean, it's very unusual for the Midwest to see this dry of air. It kind of resembled something you'd see in the desert. And now that we've gotten the typical summertime humidity in here. You know, the warmer, the more moist the air is, the more moisture available for these showers and storms to work with. And that's, you know, what we've seen has been the case the last couple of days. But conditions will greatly improve here the next couple of days. We expect the sunshine to return tomorrow, and readings will surge well into the 80s. And on the 4th of July itself, we're expecting temperatures to warm into the low 90s under a you know, mix of sun and clouds. And with another hot day following that on Wednesday, July 5th, with the possibility of yet some more powerful thunderstorms as a cold front moves through on Wednesday later in the day. So that will be the next key period that we're watching weather-wise once we get through this heavy rain episode today is later Wednesday and Wednesday night with the potential. We're already outlooked from the Storm Prediction Center for the possibility of some strong or severe thunderstorms over a large area. So that will be, you know, that will be something to watch for sure.
This is one of the best guys you're ever going to find, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Bill Snyder, Tom Skilling's weather producer. And I really appreciate when you can jump on with us here, Bill, to kind of, you know, dig into this and explain it to us of what's going on. And I think a lot of people are super interested in, you know, today and what this weekend is going to be. I appreciate it. All right,
hey,
my friend.
Dean, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. See you in the hallways here at the TV station soon, Bill Snyder. Quick break. And when we come back, we remember the legend Dick Biondi next.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for listening. It's good to be back at Magic 104. Well, I'll tell you, seems like I've been away for a month, but that trip to Memphis was out of sight. We're going to talk about that and a few other things between now and 10 o'clock. Magic 104, Archie Bell and the Drells. Let's tighten up. Dick Biondi on a beautiful Tuesday, August 18th, 1987. Good to be back at work. Dick Biondi asking you to smile and think positive, because everything is good. And when you smile, you look a whole lot better. Well, no variants here. Nothing but the oldies. Magic 104, Dick Biondi for Wild Italian with the Beatles.
How about that? That is some radio skill right there. Listening to the great Dick Biondi, who, if you've been listening to the news this morning, you heard the news that he passed away this past Monday at age 90 after 67 years on the air here in Chicago and in other major cities around the country. Truly one of the founding fathers of rock and roll radio. You know, with that style that he had.
The energy.
The style, the energy. And he maintained that energy. I mean, I can understand when he was 20, 25 years old having that much energy, but he was on the air when he was, you know, 80 years old and still with that same energy. And a legend in Chicago. And people of all ages remember Dick Biondi. As I was talking about earlier, I literally, he may be the reason that I decided, you know, this might be something I wanted to do when I got, because I would listen on my transistor radio. I would have my little earbud in, and I would listen to him play the Beatles songs, play the Four Seasons, play the Motown hits, you know, play all this music, and having such fun and being so irreverent. And, you know, I thought, oh, that's the greatest job in the world. Of course I want to do something like that. Shawnee, you must have had a similar kind of situation.
Absolutely. Oh, sure. And, you know, there was someone who came along a little bit later on WLS. Remember Ron Riley? I'm sure you remember Ron. He had that same type of energy and drive, and listening to those guys. Yes, indeed. That is a big reason why I wanted to do this for a living. Sure.
Yeah, and, you know, Andy, who is... Yeah. You know, like 40 years younger than Shawnee.
Hold it. Let's do the math here.
even Andy, considerably younger than Shawnee and me.
I'm glad you included yourself there.
Also, you know, was influenced by Dick Biondi, had an awareness of him.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people from back in the day, and, you know, they kind of fade into the vapor. Dick Biondi, you know, stayed in the forefront of radio pretty much his entire career.
Yeah, you know, you go back and watch that Tom Hanks movie, That Thing You Do, and when the Wonders are shopping their record all around the country, you hear DJs in that same vein, with that energy, with the rhyming, and with a great awareness of what they're talking about there. And it all came from him, and I think that you can hear a lot of that in that movie. And as I was growing up, too, even not listening to Dick Biondi exclusively, but, you know, other DJs were kind of going through that that style. And that seemed to be, you know, you had to have that that edge to you to be able to do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, back in the day, certainly, you know, when he and a handful of other DJs were inventing how to do this kind of radio, I mean, this kind of radio didn't even exist until the early 60s, right? When, you know, rock and roll was coming along and the Four Seasons were popular and, you know that genre of music. Dick Biondi was inventing how to do this. So, of course, everybody copied him. And WLS at the time, you know, boomed out all over the United States. So people were able to hear Dick Biondi with his knock-knock jokes, and his On Top of a Pizza song, which became so famous. I mean, he just really, literally revolutionized radio. And people are texting us this morning and remembering personal memories of Dick Biondi, meeting him at sock hops, as they were called back in the day, where, you know, radio DJs would go to high school dances and, you know, host them, and people remembering what a nice guy Dick Biondi was to people. Here's one that says, in the mid-80s, Dick hosted an adult oldies dance at Mount Prospect's Randhurst Mall and greeted everyone personally. I told him I have reel-to-reel tapes of him off of the radio. Shawnee, did you text that in?
No.
You would have, say, reel-to-reel tape.
I would have reel-to-reel tapes, but no, I don't have any, remember of Dick Biondi, and I did not text that in.
I used to, I mean, in addition to lying in bed, you know, with the lights off and the covers over my head so my parents wouldn't know that I was still awake and listening to the radio with the earbud in my ear on my transistor radio, I would make tape recordings of my favorite DJs, Dick Biondi, Ron Riley, Art Roberts. I mean, these are the guys back in the day. You know, so even though I'm making fun of you for being a big dork, I was just as much one as well. Let me see here. Here's one. How interesting is this? 773 area code says Dick Biondi was a church lecturer at St. Francis Borgia Church. It was a cool wake up to hear his voice at Christmas Mass. Can you imagine that? Having Dick Biondi, doing readings in a church with that very, kind of signature style that he had. How about that? People are, also remembering listening on their transistor radios. 815 area code. It's kind of funny that in the 60s I would listen to this little transistor radio that went everywhere with me. And now in 2023, I take my iPhone with me.
Yeah.
To listen, to radio. It's a huge loss and a legendary figure in American music, in American radio. Dick Biondi truly was one of a kind. So we'll definitely miss him. I'm sure Bob Surratt will have much more. Bob was, as I had mentioned earlier, I had met Dick many times through the years, talked with him many times through the years. I wouldn't really say that I was friends with him, but Bob Surratt was, and I'm sure he'll have some very personal stories to tell about his friendship, a longtime friendship with Dick Biondi, tomorrow morning on his show here on WGN Radio. It's 10:53, a quick break, and we'll come right back.
Who needs a theme song anyway? I figure, we're here every night at 9 o'clock. Every night. I have to remind you that Nut is here again. Hello there. This is the world's ugliest disc jockey, Dick Biondi. And we're here until midnight. We've got a lot of fun. And hello to all the wonderful people out there at 3 and 20 past the hour and I for capital M-A-Y, capital S-O-N-S, Masons, where teens are queens and Masons is the place to shop for your Christmas shopping.
Wow. There. Wow, listen to that. Where teens are queens in their commercials. I guess a woman's wear store? I don't really remember what that was that he was talking about, but that was Dick Biondi shortly after he started on WLS, which began his career here in Chicago. There's a famous urban legend that Dick Biondi was fired from WLS for telling a dirty joke on the air. I've had several people ask me about that already this morning because it's such an urban legend, and it never happened. In interviews, many, many years later, Dick had talked about that and said that the dirty joke story was an urban legend, never did it, never happened, he didn't get fired for that. He did get fired, apparently, at WLS for complaining to the management that they were running too many commercials on his show, and he objected to that. I mean, but what did we say earlier? That he commanded 60% of the radio listening audience during his early stint at WLS. He commanded 60% of everyone listening to the radio. 60% of them were listening to Dick Biondi. So he was on top of the world, and he didn't like that they were cramming so many commercials into his show. Complained to the management, and the management decided that we can do this without you, and they let him go. And he bounced around. He went to Los Angeles. He went to New York. He came back to Chicago to WCFL at the time. Went to. Was it North Carolina? I believe he worked in North
Myrtle Beach.
Myrtle Beach. Yeah, for quite a while.
That's where Bob Surratt caught up with him.
In a Where Are They Now segment that Bob was doing when he was doing features on WBBM. That brought him back to Chicago. It was Bob Surratt's feature that brought him back to Chicago. And he worked on a variety of stations, WBBM FM on WJMK, Magic 104 on WLS FM for a while. I mean, he's had, it's been just an absolutely amazing career that he had and the legacy that he leaves on Chicago. We'll remember more of Dick Biondi and play some more of this great old audio. Schwani and I are enjoying hearing the jingles
Absolutely.
The radio geeks in us are enjoying. Hey, man, listen to that. In fact, I'm going to do the rest of the show talking like Dick Biondi. And in honor of Dick Biondi, I'm going to talk fast and talk like that. I've got a headache just doing it for 10 seconds. All right, stem around. We've got a lot more for you here this morning. What a morning this is turning out to be. I thought this was going to be a nice, easy show today.
You never know.
Thought we'd play some, I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Do my Jimmy Cagney impersonation. My father thanks you. My mother thanks you.
That's your favorite 4th of July movie, isn't it?
And I thank you. Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great movie.
And more every year I get blank looks when I bring up, from young people, when I say my favorite 4th of July movie is Yankee Doodle Dandy. I say, the George M. Cohan story. And their face goes even more, their face gets even more blank. George M. who?
What?
Yeah, kind of like the scene in the movie when the kid's car breaks down and they find George M. Cohan resting in his yard.
Attaboy, Andy. I love this.
Yeah, see?
Andy for the old people save here.
Gotcha.
Yep. What are the other songs?
Jeepers
over
Creepers.
There,
yeah.
Over there.
Send the word over there that the Yanks are coming.
You know, that's very...
And it won't be over till they're over there.
Go, Schwanny.
Schwanny M. Cohan. With our John Philip Sousa salute.
We're all marching around the newsroom here now.
It's very infectious music. I defy any of you to listen to that music and not start your own marching band.
Grand old flag, right?
We're a grand old flag. You're a high flag. What else? Give my regards to Broadway?
Yep. That might be Irving Berlin.
No, is it?
Is it? It's either Irving Berlin or George M. Cohan. And then there's other blank stares now. Irving who?
Irving who? Berlin what? Isn't that a bar on Belmont Street, Berlin?
On Irving Park.
Hang on. I'm looking that up here. It's fascinating radio. Listening to someone go to Google. Written by Mr. George M. Cohan.
Oh, it is George M. Cohan. Yeah. Okay.
My regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. Tell all the girls
that's
on
how
42nd
far we've
Street. And I will soon. All right. I think we have dwindled the audience down
follow
to two or three.
Follow the bouncing ball.
That's right. We are now the only three people listening, and we'll take a break. A rainy Sunday morning, kick off the 4th of July weekend, as we've been hearing in Schwanee's forecasts and also from Bill Snyder, Tom Skilling's weather producer who joined us earlier. Rain's going to be around till 4 or 5 o'clock today, so you can make your plans accordingly. Have we heard any updates, NASCAR updates, Schwanee?
It's in a holding pattern. That's the latest update. And just before I did the 11 o'clock news, I haven't mentioned this to you, but we can see a little bit of Columbus Drive from the south end of the offices and studios here.
Oh, fancy.
And I was here yesterday afternoon and looked out there just after things got underway for a little while, after 4 o'clock. And you could see the cars, making the corner or turning the corner at Jackson and then going south again on Columbus. Well, about 5 minutes to 11 here, 20 minutes ago, I looked out and there were nothing but flashing lights on Columbus there where the race should be
Going
proceeding.
On
right now. Yeah, but it's now in a holding pattern. That's the word from NASCAR.
Because it was going to start at 10 o'clock, right?
Yeah, it was supposed to start at 10, and then they were talking 10:45, and now the reason for the delay is it's too much standing water. They have tires that can handle the rain, and I think most of the cars have switched to those tires already, but there's only so much rain that you can actually race in and make it safe.
Right, yeah. So, safety is number one. And I was watching some of the television coverage yesterday, and I got to admit, I've been pretty much nothing but critical of this whole thing, but I got to say it was pretty cool watching it. Seeing our local landmarks and these cars going 130, 150 miles an hour down Columbus Drive, and seeing the museums and things like that, it was kind of cool to watch all of that. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh man, I hope nothing goes wrong.
Yeah,
you know, because it's right on 20. It's right, like, right in your front door, pretty much, right?
Well, not right in my front door, but I'm not all that far away.
Were you out there selling lemonade yesterday to the people?
Yes, Opie and I were there.
Schwanee's lemonade
3 cents
stand
for a large glass.
Out on Michigan Avenue.
Right. The course starts and ends at Columbus and Buckingham Fountain. It goes south to Balbo, then east on Balbo to DeSable Lakeshore Drive, south-southwest onto Roosevelt, back up Columbus, and back west on Balbo, and then around the semicircle near the Congress Hotel, there off of Michigan Avenue, up to Jackson, and back around to Columbus.
Yeah, it's something. So we'll keep you posted on how this is all going to work, you know, if or when they're going to get started today. It's very possible, right, that everything could get pushed back till tomorrow?
That's the word. Because they schedule a rain day just in case, you know, kind of like what they do opening day in Chicago for baseball. They always have one game scheduled and an off day. So that's kind of what the thought process was there, I believe.
All right. So we'll see what happens with that. And hey, Lollapalooza is right hot on the heels of all of this.
A month away now.
Yeah. Can't wait. Schwanee and I in the mud pits. We love going down there and just rolling around in the mud with all the other kids out there. Except for Schwanee and I, it's not so much rolling around in the mud, it's falling down because we can't stand up. Where's my walker?
We should ask if they know any George M. Cohan songs.
That would be fantastic. Yeah, that would be great if we could see if we get Billie Eilish to do
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Or Over There.
I'm a Doodle Yankee. What? I've got the titles all mixed up. All right. So because of all the weather related things today, a lot of the things we had planned on the show today, everything got pushed back a little bit. Let me take a quick break and we'll catch up with what's going on with some free Shakespeare that you will be able to see in Chicago this year, all coming up next. Good to have you here with us today. We've had, because of the weather, some unexpected guests in the show. So some of the things that we normally do on the show, our theater segment and A-list interviews, etc., everything's getting kind of jumbled around a little bit. But I wanted to try to catch up on a few things because I love that there is an opportunity for you to see some Shakespeare in Chicago for free. Midsummer Flight is presenting free productions of Shakespeare's Chime Line, July 7th through August the 13th. Beth Wolf is the artistic director. And Beth, thank you for your patience in getting bounced around today with our schedule. We appreciate it, but I'm glad you could join us. Explain what this free Shakespeare is this summer that people can take advantage of.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me here this morning. So we're doing Shakespeare's play Cymbeline. It's a slightly lesser known Shakespeare play. It's not one of the greatest hits everyone's heard of. But we are really excited to do it this summer because it's like a great big fairy tale. And so we are going to be touring it to about six parks, north side, south side, west side. We open this Friday, July 7th, and we're going to run it for 6 weeks.
And explain what, you know, we know King Lear, we know you know, some of the famous Shakespeare pieces. As you say, Cymbeline is not one of the more prominent ones, but explain what it is.
Yeah, so like I said, it's kind of like a great big fairy tale. A lot of the same tropes that you see in fairy tales or other Shakespeare plays show up in this one. There's a heroine who dresses up like a boy. There's an evil queen. There's a bit of a fight for the throne. There's huge sword fights. There's music. The setup for the story at the very start of the story is that the king has wanted his daughter to marry his new wife's son. She doesn't want to, so she marries someone else that her father does not approve of, and the king banishes her new husband. And that's how the play begins, and it goes on from there. Because it's a lesser-known play, we also have a full synopsis of the story on our website. I know that some people like to know the story before they go watch a Shakespeare play, and so we've put that all on our website. So if folks want to, you know, do a little studying up before they come, they can read a short summary.
Yeah, I do find that helpful when I go to see Shakespeare, because it takes, for me at least anyway, it takes me a little while to get into the rhythm and the patterns of Shakespeare talk, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Your ear has to become accustomed to the language.
Yeah. So it does help if you know a little, you know, you don't really get spoilers or anything like that, but you get kind of an idea of what's about to be presented to you. When you were describing Cymbeline, it sounded a little Game of Thrones, like a little less graphic, but it did have this sort of Game of Thrones like fantasy-esque quality. Would you say that's fair?
I think that's absolutely fair, although I do want to say also we're performing our production out in public parks, so we're going for a more family-friendly version of that, but I think that's absolutely an apt comparison.
Yeah, so tell me, now all of this is going to be free in the parks around the Chicago area starting next Friday, July the 7th. Explain what else you all will be doing.
Well, Midsummer Flight has been around since 2012, and so we have grown every year and added new parks every year. So the new thing for us this year is we're adding two new parks to our tour. We're adding Harold Washington Park down in Hyde Park, and we are adding Kelvin Park, which is out around Belmont Gardens. It's been part of our mission to expand our programming to reach more of the city because our whole goal is to provide high-quality, accessible Shakespeare. It's free, it should be in communities, and so we're really excited to be getting out to, you know, really what feels like, you know, more like every corner of the city this summer.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you do it. I love that you make it at no charge. We were just talking about, you know, kind of the state of theater in downtown Chicago right now, where theaters are struggling to stay open and, you know, closing at the last minute, like we just heard about Looking Glass Theater Company, whether or not it's because people don't want to come downtown because of crime, whether it's the cost that's involved, whether it's expressway travel to come into downtown Chicago. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that people are, not just in Chicago, people are not going to theaters anymore, but cost is a significant factor in that. So the fact that you're providing high-quality theatrical entertainment for nothing is great. And I love that you are aiming it toward children. I mean, sadly, when budgets get tight, arts programs are usually the first to go, and it seems to me like arts programs should be the ones that we cling on to tightly because they provide such a balance in our life. They provide important stories that especially kids need to hear, you know, to make them more well-rounded, don't you think?
I absolutely agree. And one of my favorite things about doing this work every summer is that we are out in communities. So for accessibility, it's not only that it's free, it's that we're bringing it to the communities. People don't have to travel downtown. We're right there where they live. And then we get to really connect. Something that we do that's really fun is in addition to performing in the parks, we also rehearse in the parks where we will perform. And so we get to connect a little more with the communities. Kids come and watch our rehearsals. They get excited watching the sword fights or seeing the musicians playing music. A couple years ago, there were some girls watching a rehearsal, maybe 4 or 5 years old, and they were talking to some of the actors who were playing fairies, and the fairies started playing music and got these little girls to sing with them and declared that you're all fairies with us now.
Oh, it that's was, great.
It those little anecdotal moments are part of what makes this work so incredibly special.
Yeah, and I know what a lot of people do is they come early for a performance, and they put out a picnic spread, right? So, I mean, you
yes,
can kind of make,
chairs,
make an evening of it, right?
Your picnics, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a terrific program. Cymbeline is going to be performed starting next Friday, July 7th, and running through August 13th at the Chicago Women's Park and Garden, at Gross Park, at Kelvin Park, Harold Washington Park, Lincoln Park, and Tui Park. And if you want to get more information, Beth, what's the best way to do that?
They can go to our website, which is www.midsummerflight.com. And Midsummer is spelled funny. It's spelled M-I-D-S-O-M-M-E-R, flight, midsummerflight.com.
Yeah, it's spelled like it's midsummer, but it's actually Midsummer Flight. Cymbeline being performed for free. And thank you for you and all your performers and tech people and all the people involved for making this happen. The artistic director of Midsummer Flight, Beth Wolf, we appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And when we come back from the break, I want to catch up and find out what's going on out at the MAC, the Mackinac Arts Center out in the suburbs. They have a very ambitious lineup as well of things that are coming up. I want to talk about just some things that are coming up over the next week or so. That you can partake in. There's a lot that's going on this weekend, weather permitting, everything sort of being put on hold for today because of this rain that looks like it's going to be around till about 4 o'clock today. So we'll keep an eye on that. Schwani will give us an update on the weather and the NASCAR and all things going on this Sunday morning. We have an exceptionally busy Sunday morning, and we'll bring you all up to date on that right after this. 11:36. Dean Richards dance party, apparently. That's one way to while away the rainy hours. It's 11:36. WGN. Schwani, Andy, I was thinking about our big tree time broadcast and things that we could do, because I never stop thinking about that. It's one of my favorite shows of the year that we do. And, you know, the 4th of July weekend is where they have that hot dog eating contest.
Right.
Where's
that?
Coney Island.
That guy, Coney Island. And what's that guy that
Joey
wins?
Chestnut.
Joey Chestnut.
Joey Chestnut.
Rams, like...
he inhales.
150 hot dogs.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that we try that at the... tree time.
Well, we've eaten some rather exotic foods.
We have
in the past, so
but we've never had
perhaps
a contest. We've never had a contest,
true,
though. And I was thinking we could have a hot dog. We could all do that, right?
Yeah, sure, we can.
I can force some hot dogs down me. Sure.
You dip them in the water so they get that's what this Joey Chestnut guy does, right?
I got some practice the other day at Wrigley Field, as a matter of fact.
Of how many hot dogs did you have?
One.
Wow.
That's not practice.
What a champion you are.
I'm warming up. I'm warming up.
Wow. So I was thinking about that, and maybe because of that music that we just played, maybe we have a big dance contest. I like to do as many things as possible that don't make one bit of sense on radio.
Well,
what happened to the wedding?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about when you brought that up.
That's very true.
And the band, the wonderful the polka band,
Eddie Carosa and his boys from Illinois.
They were great last year. They added a really wonderful dimension to the show.
Well, you know,
I'm not kidding. They really did.
We've already had people say that they would either get married or renew their vows on the show for when we do the show there next November. So maybe we can incorporate all these things. We have the polka band, you know, to walk the bride down the aisle, polka style, here comes the bride. Maybe after the wedding, maybe the bride and groom have hot dog eating contest.
And then dance
just
it
what
off.
They need for the honeymoon,
and then,
right?
And then dance it off. It works. It all works out.
Yeah.
And speaking of tree time, by the way, I've learned that our hosts who have us out there every year, Joe and Laura Kane, they are going to be having a Christmas in July blowout sale. A lot of you come out for the big holiday show, the live broadcast that we do every Christmas season. but they are having an incredible 70% off the highest quality Christmas tree sale, plus all the cool stuff that they sell at the store. Wouldn't you both agree that that is, I mean, that's, nobody gets out of there without going, oh, I'd love to have one of those. All the little accessories that go around the house.
Yeah, my cousin, when she comes, every time, you know, before she has to buy something new every time she's there.
And a lot of people don't know, Shawnee's apartment is like going to the North Pole. He has his whole house set up like it's Christmas time, 365 days a year. But tree time, so Shawnee, maybe you want to head out there, up to 70% off on the stuff, a big blowout sale. That they're having on all their decorations, their trees. Tree Time is on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington, the Tree Time Christmas in July blowout sale. And don't worry about whether or not you've been naughty or nice. Everybody gets an incredible 70% off the highest quality Christmas trees, plus wreaths, garland, and trim. Tree Time Christmas creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington starting next week, Wednesday. July the 5th, all of this will start. So get out to Tree Time and tell Joe and Lori that we said hi. We can't wait to get out there to do the big annual show. I want to bring a longtime friend of the show on the air with me. Diana Martinez is the director of the Mackinac Arts Center, the MAC, and all the great things that they have planned that are going to be coming up there soon. Diana, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. So nice to hear from you.
I appreciate your patience on this crazy morning. We've had so many things happening with the weather and so forth, but I wanted to touch base with you just to talk about some of the things that you have coming up at the MAC that people can enjoy out at the College of DuPage this summer.
Well, right now, we have transformed our entire art center. We have four theaters and an art gallery, and we've transformed it into an Andy Warhol art show. And we have 94 original Warhols that are in the gallery and 150 original Warhol photos taken by Andy, and a children's area and a Studio 54 recreation. So we are back in the 60s and 70s and 80s and having Warhol fun right now.
Far out, man.
It is really pretty awesome.
That's pretty cool. I know that you plan ahead and you've got some pretty cool things that will be coming up. What is on the schedule at the MAC?
Well, our brochure just got announced and it just hit mailboxes. And I think some of the fun things we're going to have is Tower of Power will kick off the season. And then we have some really interesting things like a one-woman Ruth Bader Ginsburg show that was done in Washington that's really phenomenal.
Wow.
And the hip-lay ballerinas that originated out of Chicago. They tour all over the world, and they do ballet in a hip-hop fashion. It's really, really amazing. And the Barricade Boys are coming from England, and they do all the hits from Les Miserables and all your favorite sort of musicals like that. And we have a George Michael show, and we have Daniel and Irish show. So it's just a full season of 40 different events and shows that people can choose from and create their own season.
I'm not sure which of those shows might be my favorite, because you've hit about six different things there that I jotted down. You know, make sure I get more info about this or this or this. Tower of Power, I have seen perform so many times. You know, You're Still a Young Man, Baby, among their many hit songs. But what a powerful R&B, jazzy ensemble that they have been performing for, like, I'm going to say 50 years, maybe? 40, 50 years?
Well, I know, and, you know, I have a fabulous drummer that works for me, and he also is a musician, and he's like, they are so good, can we get them? And it worked out that we could get them. And so I mean, it's fun to just try new things. And for people who like jazz, we have When You Wish Upon a Star, and it's a tribute to 100 years of Disney.
Wow.
And that is by the Harlem Jazz Quartet, that's a jazz ensemble that will be performing out of New York. So we try to do a nice variety of work so that people can see different sorts of things that they might not normally see. And I always tell somebody, try it. And if you hate it and you want to leave, I'll give you a refund and an exchange and you come back and see something else. But I always want to encourage people to try something new,
yeah.
Right?
Well, I got to say, I've never seen a bad show out at the Mac. You got a pretty good track record going on out there. People want to get more info on any of these shows. And by the way, this Andy Warhol exhibit is until September 10th. Am I right about that? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So you've got all summer long to go and check that out. It's not a collection that you're going to be able to see, anytime soon. That and all the other shows that Diana has talked about.
I'll tell you this Andy Warhol show, it's the Bank of America collection, and it truly is like the greatest hits, the soup cans, the Marilyn, but then things that you may never have seen, like the beautiful, gorgeous endangered animal series. And when I saw it, I was like, wow, now I get why he's just a master. And the colors, it's a very happy show. So there's nothing to do in the rain. Today's a good day to come on over.
Wow, that's a great idea. Yeah, good idea. If people want to get more info, tickets, et cetera, what's the best way to do all that?
Atthemac.org.
Couldn't be easier than that. Diana Martinez is the director of the Mackinac Arts Center out at the College of DuPage. I hope you have a great 4th of July weekend. Eventually, it's going to dry out, and you'll be able to enjoy it. Diana.
You too.
All right.
Thank you
so much. A quick break, and we've got something else that's coming up in the Chicago area next weekend. If you love Greek food, that's coming up next. Opa! It's 11:48. And this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Talking about things going on for the weekend, there is something I wanted to bring your attention to that is actually going on, not this weekend, but the following weekend. And that is the St. Spyridon Greek Orthodox Church Greek Fest that's going on. You've heard me talk about these Greek Fests at different Greek Orthodox churches around the area for years now. And, we don't pay enough attention, I don't think, to South Side and South Suburbs. And St. Spyridon is out in Palos Heights. And their big festival is July 8th and 9th. And Frank Kopanis is their parish council president. Frank, good morning. Very nice to have you on the show today. Hello.
Good morning, Dean. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So talk a little bit about what you all have planned out there. I've been to your festival the last couple of years, and it's so much fun, and the food is so good. It's really a good time.
It really is. We've planned a great authentic Greek food offerings. We're also going to be having Greek dance troupe performances. The Greek dancers are students that range in age from first grade to high school. They'll perform each night from at 7:30 p.m. And these dancers represent the youth of the church and help keep the Hellenic Greek customs and traditions alive as they're passed down to future generations. We also have a raffle. The total prizes are $12,500, with first prize at $7,500, second prize $2,000, and then three $1,000 prizes, which makes it gives everyone five chances to win a lot of money and support the church.
Yeah, very. It's very nice. Yeah. It's fun to watch the dancers because I mean they're pretty much like professional dancers doing it. But what's I enjoy that, but also I enjoy when people just get up from their tables and join hands and they start dancing, and everybody, no matter what your ethnicity, no matter what your background, everybody joins in the fun, and it's a real sense of community whether you're Greek or not, to participate, not only in the dancing, but the food and the fun. That's what I get out of this sense of community, you know, of what we should be of celebrating one another instead of in this world where things are so separated. Here's something that's bringing all different kinds of people together. And I think that's significant.
It really is, Dean. And I have to say that the St. Spyridon's this annual festival is our parish's largest outreach to share its Orthodox faith and Hellenic Greek culture with the local community and beyond. And it's open to everyone, everyone of all faiths. That's a great point that you make. And it gives us all an opportunity to be together, to relax and enjoy some culture, perhaps learn a little bit about the Orthodox faith as well. We always hope for a nice weather.
You definitely don't want weather like we have today. Hopefully the weather next weekend is going to be better. We'll repeat this again in a second, but your festival, the Greek Fest, is July 8th and 9th, right?
Yes, it's July 8th and 9th. It's from 3 o'clock to 11 o'clock on Saturday, 12 till 10 on Sunday. There is free parking, local parking, in the nearby Marist Sports Complex, Trinity Christian College, where we will have shuttles running from 3 to 11 on both of those days to make it convenient for everyone to park. We also have the food, of course, the homemade pastries, which are incredible, are also available for pick up and go in case we're unable to stay for some period of time or an extended period of time.
Yeah, I want to talk about the food for a second here, because we had Dean Elikostas, who's one of your parishioners, on television with me this past week to talk about the festival, and he made some Greek food on the show and brought some food and pastries. He told me that some of the ladies of your church, some of the yayas from the church, the grandmothers, have been busy in their very own kitchens preparing and literally making things homemade that will be sold at the fest. Is that correct?
That is correct. There is homemade food, and then it's also these yayas, grandmothers, actually coming together at the church in the kitchen and baking various homemade pastries in person, best practices, if you will, with all of them, you know, putting all of their culinary talents together to make really authentic Greek cuisine, similar to what you'd find if you were traveling in Greece. I mean, that's how good this food is.
I often say when I go to a restaurant and the food is, you know, incredible, that it's like somebody's grandmother is in the kitchen cooking. And I think we all know what that means, right? That it's like incredibly delicious food. That's what it's like with these, the pastries, the baklava, and the, you know, different Greek pastries that are all handmade by these grandmothers who are cooking for you when you come to the festival. Plus, they have all the gyros going, and the roast chicken, and what's on the menu this year, because the entrees are also incredible as well.
Absolutely, the entrees this year, we have a four mini souvlaki or shish kebab dinner, which has two pitas to potentially feed more than one person. We have traditional Greek salad, tomatoes, cucumbers, onions, feta cheese, olives, and dinner roll. We also have tiropitas and spanakopitas, which are essentially cheese turnovers. One is with cheese wrapped in buttery phyllo dough, and then the other one is the same, except it also has spinach in it, which tastes incredible. Those are made from scratch. Mm. Those are made, the phyllo dough, gets rolled out. The cheese ingredients are handmade, and then they're put in there, and then they're wrapped as well as with the spinach, I believe that the ladies take the spinach home to wash it and to prepare it so that they could bring it back to church and work it.
And get it ready, get it ready to put in the oven. Yeah, that's amazing.
Absolutely. Greek French fries, which are French fries with feta cheese and Greek spices, which taste incredible. And then, of course, the main entrees are the shish kebab, which is a souvlaki, which is a grilled pork. It comes as a dinner with side of olives, tomatoes, cucumbers, dinner roll. The Greek chicken, baked half Greek chicken served with rice. Again, feta cheese, olives, tomatoes, cucumbers, dinner roll. And then the gyro plate, which is served with pita bread, tomatoes, tzatziki sauce. I will say, Dean, the our parish and the cooks, the chefs, if you will, and the chef led by Chef Dean, take great care to source the primary ingredients of these meals. Olive oil imported directly from Greece, honey. Take great care to get the best honey that we possibly can for the loukoumades, which are the fried dough honey balls. And then they pour honey syrup on them with the cinnamon, and they taste incredible.
Yeah, that's the longest line. So, that's the longest line at the festival because they're so delicious. And, boy, once you get them, you get these little warm fried dough balls that are drizzled with this light honey. Delicious. And you could just eat the whole package yourself. They're so wonderful. Give me all the details because we're almost going to run out of time here. Give me all the details on the Saint Spyridon Greek Orthodox Church Greek Fest. It's not this weekend, but the next weekend, right?
Yes, next weekend, July 8th and 9th. It's at 123rd and Ridgeland in Palos Heights. It will be on Saturday from 3 to 11, and then Sunday from 12 to 10. There's free parking and shuttle from Trinity Christian College and Marist Sportsplex. There will be Greek dancers at 7:30 p.m. Each night. And the festival led by our parish priest, Father George, supported by Chef Dean, who's the festival chairman, and many, many volunteers. We are looking forward to seeing everyone of all faiths, whoever can make it out. We would love to see you and just be together. And have a night of fellowship and festivity.
It'll be it'll be a lot of fun. Yeah. When you get there, enjoy some food, enjoy some fun. There's things for the kids to do, a little something for everyone. Make sure that you say hello to Father George. I'm a huge fan. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. And Frank, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And I hope we'll see you out there as well. Frank Kopanis, the Parish Council President, St. Spyridon Greek Orthodox Church out in Palos Heights. Thank you, my friend, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Dean. It's a pleasure. Take care. See you there.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much. All right. And that's going to wrap it up for us here today.